We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Adam Sherlup. Born in Brooklyn and now living north of the border in Quebec City, Adam Sherlup is the executive director and founder of the Hockey Foundation, a 501c3 charitable nonprofit with a mission to change lives via hockey. Founded in 2009, the Hockey Foundation has to date donated over 6,000 pieces of hockey equipment to remote, underserved communities, coached over 2,000 players, and provided dozens of boxes of books to schools to support English literacy. Aside from hockey, Adam is a consultant in the tea industry, an obsession that began as a child when he heard Captain Picard order tea, Earl Grey, hot from the replicator. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, what type of tea are you drinking right now?
So I am drinking apparently expired, but nonetheless very delicate and fragrant Darjeeling tea from the Glenburn Estate. It is a moonshine China, which means that it leaves kind of like a Chinese hybrid into a Darjeeling plant, which there's a lot more interesting information about it, but I will spare you the details.
Well, you shared more details than I've ever seen or heard a tea explained before already. So, all right. So tea, hockey, and Star Trek, they're kind of all over the map. Which one, I guess, is more influential or more important to you in your life?
I would say Star Trek is incredibly influential and important in my life. Tea is ever present and is kind of like my happy juice, my elixir, but my kind of philosophical backbone in many ways. And it's this future of when we actually work together and there's no more poverty and no more crime and no more hatred and prejudice, and everybody can pursue their passions in the Star Trek universe. And as a result, we become kind of a critical species to the galaxy's longevity and success. And it's instead of shows and movies and for a nerd like me, books as well, that has impacted me in ways that I'm still trying to understand. And sometimes I forget that the real world is not as rosy and awesome as the Star Trek universe that I try to aspire towards.
Well, that's very interesting. Really good perspective, though. And I'm lost for words, but kind of just the analogy of Star Trek and how it's influential in your life is really, really intriguing.
It's been a fascinating theme because for all of the uplifting messages and all of the positivity, it's also forced me to look at my own relationship with money and business. And it's a universe where humans don't, or at least Earth humans don't have currency anymore. There is no economy. And I didn't really hit home until recently that maybe that's affected my own decision-making when I expect people to be more altruistic than they necessarily are, because people have to make money to live.
Yeah. That's a truth in today's day.
Yeah.
So as far as changing lives, do you think hockey really has the power to be impactful and change someone's life?
Yeah, I know it does. It's beyond the personal aspect of the fact that it's changed my life so many times over. We receive messages through our website and social media on how important hockey is to people around the world. Of course, it's notoriously popular in Canada. It's the only thing Canadians care about sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'll get some hate messages for that. but it's hockey people are passionate. And one of the ESPN hockey guys, John Butchergross, wrote this wonderful little snippet about it. It's a sport that is inherently derives passion. And so with that, there's a lot of intensity, ways that you kind of critically assess your surroundings, your life, your family, your friends, your team, your company. In all those ways, really life-changing. But for us, we see on the ground how hockey has impacted the lives of the people in the communities. We see the daily impact, the weekly, the monthly, the yearly. I mean, there are people in India now that are seen as hockey people by their peers and by their community, and it's given them something to pursue. It's given them leadership responsibilities. It's given them career possibilities. It's without a doubt changing lives for them, and for the young kids that we are coaching and they are coaching on our behalf. You know, we're teaching them life lessons through the game. We're teaching them how to work together in a team, how to be accountable for your own actions, how to persevere through challenging situations. And of course, sports in general can teach that. And it's why there's a lot of sports for development programs and funding out there from the UN and different governments. But we definitely believe that hockey is the sport that maybe can communicate those ideals best by nature of the way the game is played. And it is an ultimate team sport. Even if soccer is a more popular sport, individuals are more celebrated in soccer. It doesn't have the same physical characteristics as hockey. I mean, you have to learn a whole new mode of transportation just to prove where that's the case. And then to be able to still have excellent coordination and the speed and the strength, there's a lot of physical maintenance that's required there as well. And soccer players are in shape, but I would say a hockey player can play soccer. A soccer player can't play hockey.
You know, it's interesting how you broke it down as simple as it's a new mode of transportation that you have to learn, you know, like riding a bike, but you're just learning how to ice skate. That's simple, but yet that impactful. And your analogy of how hockey players can play soccer, but soccer players can't play hockey. So it's a deeper sense of learning. And I'm going to be biased, obviously, because I'm a huge hockey advocate as well. But yeah, that's really impactful. So I'm really intrigued how you ended up going to India and how you decided I'm going to bring the sport of hockey to this third world community that's not experienced much of anything related to this sport. What triggered that, and how did you determine on that location?
Yeah, I mean, it was a series of fortunate circumstances, fortunate accidents. And it's funny because just a few days ago, I was looking for this email specifically, the email that made me aware of hockey in Ladakh. And to step back a second, I worked for the New York Islanders at this point about a decade ago. And just over 10 years ago, I was on the ice in northeastern China on behalf of the Islanders doing youth hockey programming there. And I was doing the program with a U.S. Olympian and Hockey Hall of Famer and International Olympic Committee executive member, Angela Ruggiero, somebody who has a resume way more impressive than me, and a hockey player that's way better than I am. And so Angela was in charge of this program in China, and I'd been assisting her and gaining some invaluable experience. And it was after we were both away from the island email, keeping me in the loop on a conversation in Ladakh, but it wasn't an email about hockey in Ladakh. And without getting further down the details of it, the only thing I really took away from the email, and And so I did a brief amount of research, looked into the organization that, that was being discussed in the email chain, and was captivated immediately. I even responded to Angela's email, and I didn't recall this until seeing it just a few days ago. Do you mind if I reach out to them? I really want to go there. So that was December 8th, 2008. I think it was already doing a public fundraising campaign, and it was actually part of the sage advice of C.C. Chapman, who's done a bunch of marketing and different books and is a speaker. And I reached out to him. We'd been acquaintances for a while at that point. So what do you think I should do? And his advice was, write about it. Talk about why you want to do it, why it's important to you. And so that's what I did. I started up a blog. I called myself the hockey volunteer and decided I'm going to go there. I'm going to do the thing that I did with the Islanders in China, but without having to be responsible for how many tickets are sold and how much sponsorship dollars are sold to keep the team running. I want to just be very straightforward, and I love hockey. They love hockey. I want to help them. I want to give them equipment. I want to teach the game in the way that, that I think it should be taught. And just about a month later, I was on a flight to Delhi to be able to do that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's actually how you and I connected years ago. I don't even remember when we first connected, but I think I was just on Twitter and I was looking for people in the hockey community, and I fell across what you were doing. And I think I made a small donation of probably like $25 or something. And then you reached out and you thanked me, and then we just started a conversation. And so you putting your message out there is what triggered me to kind of support what you were doing. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, it's incredible to see how far it's come. And there's so many different layers to it now, of course. I mean, now we're talking about, I mean, at this point in 2009, I was on the ice in Ladakh, probably training Team India, the first ever Team India, because my trip had gone kind of so well that they had recruited me to be their national coach, well, figure out what their national program was going to be and be their head coach. And all of that led to my founding of the Hockey Foundation, just my time over there and realizing that there was a ton of potential to continue this and grow this type of program to just use hockey to help. And it was a perfect time. I mean, obviously, early 2009, and we were still dealing with a significant recession, and I was a relatively young guy at that point, or at least I felt like one. And so there was, it was, the timing was perfect, and there was not too many things to keep me from doing this. And yeah, so the Hockey Foundation was born out of that. And all these years later, we are continuing to support and grow.
That's awesome. So I don't know if you did just share this, but maybe you've got a better one, because that's a great story already. But can you share with me your most successful or favorite networking story or experience that you've had?
I really dedicated my 2016 and my early part of 2016 to going to as many conferences and hockey and sports and charity related events. I mean, and early on, I think last February, I was at an event at the United Nations for sports and diplomacy. And shortly after, went to an event in Toronto that was mostly tailored towards the students there, and like a sports business advice to the students at the University of Toronto for just what life is like in the industry. And I'd already kind of gone through all of that. I wasn't there for that. I was there to try to get my thing in front of Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner of the NHL. And so I made sure that I was in the front of the room. And when Bill Daly was up on stage for the kind of the keynote Q&A at the end, I made sure that I got up and asked a question that was more of a statement of who I was than was actually a practical question. I think I probably asked international hockey, which is, everybody knows the state of hockey internationally, in the sense that there's only a handful of countries that are competitive. The rest of the world is trying. So the question was just meant to say, hey, I used to coach hockey in China for the Islanders, and now I do hockey in India. And that was all I was really trying to get across to him. And fortunately, I piqued his interest with the China thing, because there's been a lot of news over the past few months of different hockey endeavors in China as they ramp up for the 2022 Olympics. And the NHL obviously sees a huge market in China, relating and looking at the NBA and seeing that the NBA has done very well in growing their market there. And so I was able to get in front of him, obviously in front of the big room, but as he was walking off the stage, I kind of bum rushed him and asked him if I could get his card and follow up with him. And he was very gracious and said, of course, and then bolted out of the event. Nobody else got a chance to speak to him. And I followed up with him maybe a week later. He immediately put me in touch with one of his subordinates, who's still a senior vice president at the NHL. And from that, I mean, I've had multiple meetings with them. They then invited me to participate at the World Cup of Hockey Hockey Sense Summit, where I got to speak on international hockey development and in front of a panel of some of the most prolific people in the hockey community. And the event was at the Hall of Fame, in the awards room at the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto. And ways that the Hockey Foundation can continue our programming in other parts of the world with the support of the NHL. It's still not finalized. It's still a lot of details to work out, but the fact that all of this has come about essentially because I went to a conference that wasn't tailored for me and made sure that I was able to get in front of somebody that obviously has a lot of power within the organization that he represents. And if I only reacted to my nerves, I would to talk to him and progress to where we are today.
Yeah, I'm curious. And first off, that's a fantastic story. That is it. Wow. So inspiring and so many opportunities that came from it. But what's really kind of sitting here in my head is, how did you get the nerve, or what did you do to overcome that fear of, I'm going to stand up in this room and make this statement so that I get noticed? Like, that's a lot to put on your shoulders. And talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I've had kind of a personal life philosophy that when I'm faced with a decision of to do this or that, or do this or don't do this, and however you want to break it down, when I'm essentially faced with, well, two paths in a road, kind of to paraphrase Robert Frost, I've kind of conditioned myself to think of what would I regret the least. Not what would I regret the most necessarily, but what would I regret the least. And I mean, they are two sides of the same coin, but I've been, instead of thinking about what I fear and what I am worried about the negative outcomes, I think about really how would I feel if I didn't do something. I've essentially conditioned my own question to myself to force a result, if that makes any sense. Like it has an inherent bias in my own challenge to myself, because it always is going to skew me towards taking the risk, taking the chance, which is my personality in the first place. But if I, there's certainly the other side of me, and I think most rational people, that you don't want to embarrass yourself. You don't want to go outside of your comfort zones. You want to live a normal day and just kind of stay in as much as possible. But when I'm faced with that type of circumstance of what do I do when I've got this person in front of me and I can make an impression, my choice is I say something or I don't dare, or I don't put myself out there. What would I regret the least? I would regret the least putting myself out there. And if I didn't, I would regret that more because it's a missed opportunity. And that's where the bias is, but that influences my decision all the time. And it's catalyzed by the fact that I'm responsible for an organization and for people volunteers and benefactors and all different people that relate to the Hockey Foundation in one aspect or another. And my role as executive director and chairman of the board and all of that is to fight for my organization as best as I possibly can. And I was there for the Hockey Foundation, and they would be negligent of me as executive director to not stand up and say something, even if I fall flat, because at least I'm advocating for my organization. And so those two things side by side, at that point, it's not even a thought anymore. It's like, oh, I'm obviously standing up and saying something. Now I just have to formulate what it is.
Well, and your actions are obviously priceless, because you just shared kind of the opportunities that have already unfolded, and who knows what's in the future. I mean, I imagine it just continues to snowball and greater opportunities are in front of you. So that, I love that. And I love your statement about, think about how I would feel if I didn't do something. That's really powerful.
Yeah, it influences almost every single decision I make at this point.
All right. So large or small, it's important to continue to connect with your network. How do you stay in front of or best nurture your network or community?
It's one of my biggest challenges to nurture and maintain the community. I mean, the easier thing, and I would say easier, but not easiest or even easy, is to keep posting on social media. It certainly takes time and effort, and it's more complex than I think people without social media experience will process. I don't want to insult anybody who's not involved in it. It's also less valuable than people who are constantly around it perceive as well. There's a really kind of tightrope walk with social media, because if you don't do enough, you're missing opportunities. If you do too much, you're not necessarily spending your time and effort and possibly money as effectively as you could. And so there's no doubt that it's helping us build an audience and maintain an audience and keep a conversation going and help grow our overall footprint in many different aspects. But we could be doing better off of social media, and I could be doing better personally, but that's my own challenge to myself. We're a small team, and everybody is volunteer for the organization. Everybody volunteers their time, their expertise, and so it's also fitting it into when they're available. And so ultimately, we're always trying to negotiate with each other on who can do what, when, and how much. And to be frank, I mean, that's where the organization ends up missing the mark at times, because we can do a better job of engaging with people and conversing with people. And I'm so profoundly backlogged on contact form submissions, because we actually get pretty regular. It's maybe averaging one or two a day, which one a day seems modest for maybe some big organizations, but all of a sudden you're looking at 250 contact forms a year, 165 days, but let's say it's 250 contact form submissions a year. That's a lot of people to follow up with, of which they might be leads, but they're not necessarily strong leads. A lot of people are asking for things. A lot of people don't understand the commitment it makes to get involved. So now you go and pursue all these conversations with people that had enough enthusiasm to reach out, but maybe not enough determination to see it through. And so then we have to kind of go through an opportunity cost evaluation and determine, okay, is this person worth our time and effort? And that's not a decision that I want to make, but it's a long story short. I mean, it's a challenge to engage with an unknown public.
Yeah. Well, and there's a couple of things that you said there that jumped out at me. One is regarding social media and how you have to, you can't underutilize it, because then you're going to lose that attention of your audience, but you don't want to overdo it, because again, you're going to lose the interest, because they're going to say, my goodness, this is too much information being thrown at me. So there's a really good balance there. And I think for every community and network that you're trying to nurture, you just have to find what is that specific balance. And the second side of that coin is that you said was related to where to put your time. So as far as the value of the opportunity is really what's, and that's a challenge too, you know. You can talk to everyone every single day, or you can put your time and energy and the relationships that are going to be most rewarding, not only for you, but for those around you as well. And both of those are both, you know, they're big challenges. But it's finding that balance and finding that message and staying in front of your audience and your community that's important.
Yeah. And constantly challenging myself to do that. And it's some of it, obviously, I mean, there's the digital aspects of all of it beyond the social media and email and in different forms and trying to get interviews and post out videos and there's different things to do. And of course, meeting people is always helpful. But yeah, it's definitely a challenge. And as the world changes, the challenges change with it in communicating with the world. I mean, and there's no shortage of reflection on, is there relevance for charities in general? The world is at a point where maybe the way charities have operated needs to change in reaction to the way governments and societies are changing. How can charities change along with it to be more effective? And if it seems to be reinventing the wheel over and over again, is there opportunity for collaboration and partnership and consolidation within this industry of charities? And that's both within the hockey charity world and completely independent of hockey. And I think that to an effectiveness of kind of getting in front of the audience, I mean, sometimes you have to really tap into other people's audiences.
Yes. And support each other and advocate for each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what advice would you offer to the business professional who is looking to grow their network?
First and foremost, I mean, look at what events are out there. Look at what networking opportunities, conferences, different things, because there's a lot of easy ways to just meet people, and they might not be the most valuable if we were to assign value to different people within a respective industry, but they will be valuable nonetheless, because they'll help you gain experience, they'll connect you to other people, they'll challenge you to refine your own message, get you over maybe initial reservations and putting yourself out there. I think that's critical, and from there you can find maybe bigger and bigger opportunities to go to events like that. And it's not necessarily just a networking event, and it could be a trade show, it could be different things that are around trainings. Reach out to people. I mean, LinkedIn is certainly being utilized a lot these days, and there's still value to it. I think it's important to tread carefully with LinkedIn and email solicitation. I think make the pitch authentic, make it personal. I'm exhausted by cookie cutter messages that I receive from people that I don't know. And I'm happy to interact with as many people as possible that are passionate about it. It's just, I want to know that they're passionate and authentic, and it's hard to be authentic when it's clearly cookie cutter. I mean, having a template is one thing, but I've received messages from people addressed to somebody else, and then when I call them out on it, I don't even get a response. was that meant for me or for somebody? And this was a student. I think I met them at that University of Toronto event, and it was a very oddly worded message to me or to whoever. It seemed to be to every single person that he took a business card from, which again is natural. It's normal. You're going to want to have some basic things that you want to communicate to the world and to the strangers that you're trying to build a relationship with. But at the same time, I mean, take a look at who they are and what they do and observe that and comment on that and tie it into your objective. You know, get involved in the hockey world in general. Reach out to me about the Hockey Foundation and say, I love what you've done in India and I would love to talk to you about your coaching philosophy. Here's what I've been doing with coaching. Here's what I hope to be doing with coaching. Like something as simple as that. And I'm already like, oh, all right. You care just enough. That's two sentences and I'm already on board. And it doesn't have to be six paragraphs because at that point, it's probably six paragraphs about you.
I would say that it almost makes it irresistible for you to not want to connect with them because it's something that you're directly passionate about. You know, when they're reaching out saying, I want to learn more about your coaching philosophy. I love what you've done. You're just like, yeah, this is awesome. As opposed to, can I add you to my LinkedIn network?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just got a message from somebody on LinkedIn a few days ago. And in fairness, I still have to respond to the message, but it's only been 2 days. So I think I'm still within my window. He specifically said, I've been following you for a while. And I know that's true because I've seen his liking on our Facebook page. Like, so he wrote to some extent of he really does like what the Hockey Foundation does. And now he's, whatever motivated him to reach out, he's now reaching out. And because, I mean, we're a small enough organization that I can track personally people's interaction with the organization if I need to, but any organization should be doing that in the first place. You should be tracking your engagements with people. I talk about my own shortcomings in growing the network, but certainly am not ignorant to what our network is and who is engaging. And so when I see somebody like that, that is already actively liking what we do, I'm obviously going to be more inclined to want to talk to them because I know that they're a supporter.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And you've seen his name because he has been, you know, kind of on the side advocating and supporting and now that he's in front of line, you're like, yes, I'm ready to have this conversation with you because I've seen your name and I have some familiarity with it. My goodness. All right. So I'm going to switch gears here a little bit. We've talked a lot about digital networking, not too much on the traditional side, with the exception of your fantastic story connecting with the NHL commissioner. But digital networking and traditional networking, which one do you find more value in?
I think nothing replaces face-to-face communication. And to this day, one of the most impactful courses when I was at the University of Buffalo was I had one course, face-to-face communication, and another course, computer-mediated communication. And those courses just stand out to me. And it was independent of the management department. I was doing two separate degree paths and this was within the communication program. And those courses really stood out to me. And we were it was more a scientific analysis of the different ways to interpret communication. And just that, I mean, I'm referencing it today and it's been over a decade because it's just something about it stood out. And what I took away really was nothing replaces face-to-face communication. I'm in front of my computer most of the day. People will wrongly accuse me of being addicted to my devices. I'll pretend that they're wrong. I certainly see a ton of value in digital and utilize it more than anything. But when push comes to shove, I want a face-to-face meeting versus a teleconference. I want to have lunch. I want them to see my enthusiasm for the things I'm passionate about. I want them to see the way my brain works when I'm taking a second to reflect on a thought. And you don't get that same nuance from a person over the phone, and especially not when you're typing things and you have to use emojis to communicate an emotion, or you have to use LOL or things of that nature to represent your reaction, it's fine and it's great in casual conversation. But if I'm lobbying for my organization or my professional interests, I will default to meeting up with somebody.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. And I'm thinking OMG, ROFL, you know, all these acronyms are running through my head as you said, LOL. But that can only go so far. And, you know, just that expression from, you know, a cartoon as opposed to someone seeing it happening real life in front of you, so much value in that face-to-face. I agree 100% with that.
There's one interaction to that just stands out for me, and and this might be a little off topic, but I love this story. This is a 19-year-old kid. He's pretty new to hockey, and he's messaging me on social media, and he's messaging in very, very casual language. And casual internet speak in India, even if it's in English, is very different than we're accustomed to in North America. And there's things that are so hard to describe and understand for us because it's different cultures. And I mean, English languages in India, it's critically important there, but it's not used the same way. And for it to be then shortened and turned into kind of internet test me for that, he claims to be better than Wayne Gretzky. And I'm trying to tell him, like, no offense, but that's not going to happen. Like, and I don't want to destroy your dreams. It's great to have goals, but just you're 19 and you haven't been playing hockey all your life and you haven't been competing against excellent hockey players. Like, there's just a reality to the situation. And he couldn't accept that. And then he was telling me, you're just motivating me more with your words. Thank you so much, sir. And it's like, no, I'm not trying to use reverse psychology here. Like, I'm telling you straight up, like, this isn't going to work. So it's a bit of a tangent story that I just can't get over the interaction, and it didn't get through. But I did have to lecture this kid at one point of, like, if you want my help in something, you're going to have to be more professional in your request, because it's hard to take you seriously when you're using all different language forms and emojis and shorthand and caps and exclamations and cursing and all different things. How am I supposed to perceive you at that point? And he took it to heart, thankfully. He still thinks he might be better than Wayne Gretzky, but at least he's communicating more effectively.
Yeah, I'm curious what a face-to-face conversation with him would be like. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Oh, man. I look back at my 20-year-old self and shake my head. I am deeply embarrassed by who my 20-year-old self was. Those experiences and my own personal stupidity and ignorance and naivety and all the traits of youth, they've definitely shaped how I am today. And so there is a part of me that would like to say I have no regrets and I am where I am today because of what happened in the past. And of course, there's a truth to that. But could things be different today if I made different choices at 20? Absolutely. First of all, I mean, maybe I should have kept playing hockey. I'd taken a couple of years off, and my return to the game, which was probably only a year later, 21, definitely was a huge inspiration for me to kind of rekindle my love of the game. But I think some of that was maturing, and I think if I kept playing the game and kept pursuing that, maybe some other opportunities would have presented themselves. But I also, it took a long time for me to learn lessons of grit and determination and overcoming my own inherent shortcomings. And at 20, you're rarely aware of your shortcomings and rarely comfortable confronting them. And at 30, you're starting to become aware of them and starting to try to figure out how to confront them. And I haven't hit 40 yet, but I hope by 40, I'll have a much greater perspective on how dumb I was at 30. And so I think my 20-year-old self needed to both simultaneously take the things that required seriousness more serious and take the things that didn't less serious, because I think I had my wires reversed at times. And I don't think that's unnatural for anybody that's young and trying to figure out their place in the world, independent of their family.
Oh, I would agree with that. I'd imagine the majority of our listeners that are reflecting back on their 20s are thinking some very similar thoughts that you are. But you are right in that the activities that you were involved in and what you learned at that time in your life are very influential in who you are today. So don't beat yourself up so much.
No, I do my best not to, but I did a lot of stupid things.
Okay. That'll be a conversation over a beer some night when we finally meet in person.
Absolutely.
All right. So any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
Everybody is uncomfortable, so don't be uncomfortable. It's the easiest way to connect everybody. We're all in the same boat here. We're all trying to figure it out here. Some of us can feel that we know more. Some of us can pretend we know more. But at the end of the day, there's even the experts don't know much. And everybody has something to contribute, some more than others. I will definitely say in that regard. So don't hold yourself back because you perceive those around you as maybe being more comfortable or more experienced or knowledgeable, whatever, in your boat very quickly if you drop your fear and pursue your passion. And if you're not passionate about it, but you think it's what needs to be done, then do it fully and find the passion.
Some inspiring advice right there. Just, I really like how you said, you know, everyone is uncomfortable, so don't be uncomfortable. Be the differentiator. Be the one who is willing to step outside of your comfort zone. That's good advice.
Yeah. The thing that actually, I mean, just to add to that, don't take yourself too seriously. Like, be able to make fun of yourself. It's a nice, if it's sincere, it's disarming. And we'll put a lot of, you can laugh, that you can laugh at yourself and not be mean to others. Everybody else will become more comfortable around you. And not saying to be inauthentic in this, but we all have things that we know are kind of ridiculous about ourselves. Don't be afraid to use that as your entry point.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. All right. So if anyone is interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way that they can reach you?
I try to be good at Twitter. So if somebody wants to reach out to me personally, my Twitter handle is Shurlip, S-U-L-I-P, my last name, Shurlip. Of course, there's the Hockey Foundation platforms, hockeyfoundation.org, Hockey Foundation on website, on Facebook, and Hockey FNDTN on Twitter. But yeah, I'm not too hard to get a hold of.
And we'll include all of those links in the show notes. All right. So this wraps up our show. Thanks so much for being on. Lots of great stories you shared, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Adam Shurlip for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.